Iran rattles its sabers to develop a nuclear bomb. Oil from the Middle East continues to rise in price. Unrest across the region keeps the world focused on war, religion, and terrorism. Where will it lead? The Bible foretells a person called the King of the South to arise in the future, plunging the region into the largest conflict ever seen. Who will be this mysterious figure, and what will cause him to rise on the world scene? On this edition of Beyond Today, we'll explore the question, who is the coming King of the South? Stay with us.
Join our host, Darris McNeely, and his guests as they help you understand your future on Beyond Today.
For more than 60 years, the Middle East has been the focus of world attention. Conflict between the Arab states and the state of Israel has been continual. Not a day goes by without a new report coming out of the region. Iraq struggles to form a new government and society after Allied forces overthrew Saddam Hussein. The sectarian violence is a daily threat to stability and peace throughout the region. Iranian President Ahmadinejad makes inflammatory statements threatening the state of Israel and the Jewish people. Egypt faces the likelihood of a new leadership in a few years, and the possibility for radical changes to the most populous Arab state is imminent. What happens in the Middle East impacts our lives and our pocketbooks. Bible prophecy speaks of a major clash of nations in the Middle East in what is called the time of the end, the period leading to the return of Jesus Christ. The biblical prophet Daniel gives a detailed account of the history in the region and specifically mentions a figure called the King of the South. Here to help us understand this prophecy are two men, ministers with the United Church of God. Randy Stiver is a pastor, and Jerry Aust is a senior writer for the Good News Magazine. Gentlemen, welcome to the program today.
Good to be
Thanks,
here.
It's good to be here.
All right, let's jump right into the Bible on this subject in Daniel chapter 11. What is it that we are told about history and the prophecy of the King of the South from Daniel 11? Randy?
Well, Darris, let me give sort of a little bit of the ancient background. The term King of the South shows up in verse 5 of that particular chapter. And Daniel 11 is the longest detailed chapter of prophecy in the Bible. It's very detailed and very specific, and the bulk of it was written about 300 years before it was fulfilled, because that's how long Daniel predated the events. And then you can track it all right down through. Now, it starts out talking about the King of the South, and what we're talking about there are the Ptolemies, the dynasty that descended from one of the generals of Alexander the Great. Now, most people recognize Alexander the Great. He established his empire in the Middle East and
he died
in Europe
broke up.
In about the 330s is
right.
When he died. Therefore, Ptolemy the first, the general, took over and ruled Egypt and the southern section of the empire. And that was the King of the South. Now, that would mean there would be a King of the North, too, and there is, but that was another general that formed the Seleucid dynasty that ruled Syria and part of what would be modern Iraq and part of modern Israel at various times. They had a very fluctuating sort of boundary line. But that's the time frame from about the 330 B.C. up to 64 B.C.
And all of that is covered in this prophecy.
It is, in detail. Yeah.
Actually, this takes us all the way to verse 40. And so we've got specific...
Verse 40 of Daniel 11.
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Verse 40 of Daniel 11.
Right.
And it takes us all the way to verse 40, where specifically the King of the South and the King of the North are mentioned. So, of course, if you have a South, you have a North. And this thing opens up a whole new perspective as to the time of the end. And verse 40 actually takes us right into the very time of the end. So the important thing is to understand a little bit about the history, but as it projects us forward, we're looking at the very time of the end, and we're seeing things unfold in on television today in the Lebanon and other areas.
So really up to verse 40, we are taken to within just a few decades, actually, of the actual birth of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
in the historical setting of that. We've already mentioned the King of the North and the King of the South. What is it exactly we're talking about? King of North of what? South of
okay.
what, Randy?
All directions in biblical prophecies are oriented to Jerusalem. You know, Jerusalem is kind of God's focal point on this planet. Of all places, and
it's called the center of the earth, really.
Center of the earth. And when you look at it on the map, it really is. It's a bridge between Africa and
right.
Asia, and really Europe as well. But it's all oriented to Jerusalem. So it's someplace south of Jerusalem and someplace north of Jerusalem. In the ancient times, Egypt was south and Syria was north. in more modern fulfillment, well, then that spreads out a little bit, but generally south, generally north of Jerusalem. Okay.
So eventually what happens, as I just mentioned a little bit earlier, and here we got the same segue, you have those specific individuals in the south and the north. Now all of a sudden, after 64 BC, a period of time when Rome swallowed up the Seleucids, then they became, as it were, the king of the north. Now, the Romans lasted for quite some time, and eventually they fell, but then they came back again. So we have then Europe to the north, and we've got some great confederation of nations based on religion, some politics in the south.
So Rome swallowed up the Seleucid power empire there in the first century B.C. Who is this king of the north then? In that's the historical aspect. What about for the future?
Well, in the modern aspect, we would see it being Roman Empire, revived. And historically, it has been revived a number of times. Some of the famous revivals would have been with Charlemagne in 800 B.C. Rome fell in 476. So 800, it was revived by Charlemagne. There were other times, the Holy Roman Empire during the Middle Ages. Napoleon created a revival of the Roman Empire, crowned himself emperor, in fact.
Right.
And then we've had more modern fulfillments with Garibaldi later in the 1800s, and then Mussolini, Hitler, mm-hmm. Axis powers coming to the forefront during World War II.
And we look for another future?
We do indeed. In Revelation chapter 17, it shows the final revival, the seventh revival of the ancient Roman Empire. Very likely could be a Holy Roman Empire, whatever they're going to call it. It is a seventh revival. And in that we have a beast, the Bible says, which will be like a supra king or leader. And then you have 10 supportive rulers underneath of him. This thing is forming right now on the face of this earth and on the European continent. So that would be the king of the north.
All right, so we have in Daniel 11, that long prophecy, we have a detailed account from history of the period following Alexander's demise, his death, breakup of his empire, down to the return of Christ, and then we have a break that picks it up in the time of the end. But we're talking about these two individuals or these two features of the King of the North and the King of the South. What is it we're told about the King of the South, Randy?
Well, the King of the South, it says, it pushes at the King of the North, and he causes, you know, he attacks or pressures the King of the North. When we say the King of the South, again, south of Jerusalem someplace, the power block that we have in modern times is Islam. And Mecca and Medina down in Saudi Arabia are south of Jerusalem. And the population, the Arabic population of Islam, a great deal of it is to the south of Jerusalem. But the power base, the central portion of it is in Mecca. So that's
their holiest spot.
It is the holiest spot of Islam. So that's the power base. You know, the Middle East is connected religiously more than it is politically or militarily. Now, those latter two can be brought into conjunction as well, but it is based off of the culture of the religion that has pulled them together.
Okay. So what we actually have here, building on what Randy was talking about, we have religion, of course, the Islamic movement, which can stretch...
Very important topic.
Oh, yeah, 1.5 billion people, if you stretch from Indonesia, an incredible number of Islamic believers there and practitioners, and they come all the way across to Morocco and even into southern Spain, if you want to go back as far as the Crusades and how far the Muslims, the Islamic religion and the leaders during that time, the caliphates, who got in there. I think it's really important that we think about this word push, because there are a number of ways that the term can be defined.
I think when we come back in our next segment, we talk a little bit more about that. It's an important part of what the Bible does mention.
Alrighty.
Our featured literature on today's program, The Coming King of the South, is the Middle East in Bible Prophecy. It's going to take you through a much more detailed study of this very topic of Daniel 11, plus a wider view of that part of the world and the prophecies that are impacting our world today and the world to come. We'll be right back after a message. When we come back, we're going to look more at the cause of this prophetic king to appear, why he will provoke an invasion from the north. We'll look at this when we come back. Stay with us.
The longest prophecy in the Bible predicts a global war will come from the Middle East. Understand how a future Arab confederation will challenge the world. Call 1-888-886-8632 or go online to beyondtoday.tv for your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. Read where all the major powers and trends in the Middle East today are in the Bible, including the current global war of terrorism against the United States and Israel. You need to know what could happen next. See how modern Islam, Judaism, and Christianity will bring the world to crisis. See how the coming of Islam fulfilled prophecies made nearly 4,000 years ago. It's all in the Bible, as you will discover from your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy by calling toll-free 1-888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or go to beyondtoday.tv.
And we are back to Beyond Today. Today we're talking about the coming King of the South. We're offering this booklet, The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. You can access a copy of it on our website at beyondtoday.tv, or we'll also send you a free copy for your own reading at your leisure in your home. In our first segment, we saw that this prophetic figure, the King of the South, will come from the area south of Jerusalem, the area which is Arab and Muslim today. Gentlemen, what are some of the factors about Islam that give us a background to this question?
Well, I think when we go back to the 600s, which is when Islam became a religion, that many historians today would point out clearly and accurately enough that it was based on essentially pillage, compulsion, and violence. And all three of those were justified within Islam and glorified.
Yeah, as a means to spread the religion.
As a means to spread the religion. Forced conversions, in essence, is what it was about. And that was the way it started, and that's what it continued to do as long as the Islamic nations held, you know, a significant amount of power, which carried well into the time of the Middle Ages. So that's the core, that's the background. There are certainly many in Islam who just want to live their lives in a quiet and peaceable way. But as an organized religion, that has been its history. And we all tend to respond and to repeat our histories.
So they were operating from a perspective of spreading their faith as far and wide as they could by conquering other nations and forcing them to submit to Islam.
That's the motivation, as I understand it, based on the things that I read about Islam. And again, I think it's vitally important for us to be reminded that it's not like everyone in the Islamic religion is, you know, wants to do this necessarily. But there are those who do feel like it's vitally important for them to be able to promote the Islamic religion. And they've done that over the centuries, of course. Certainly Christians have done that as well. You can go back to the Crusades and see that, all the way down to Jerusalem.
Yes, Christianity has its own bloody history as well in many different aspects.
No one's really clean.
I think it's important that we establish that within the Islamic faith there are peaceful individuals who are sincerely wanting to live their faith and live peaceably among men.
Right.
We see, unfortunately, the radical Islamic fundamentalism on our television screens and in the effect of it today as they have attacked the West and various nations, and that is all that we see.
Even those who speak out in this day and age, over the last couple of decades, there have been scholars and others who have promoted the idea that it is indeed a peaceful spreading out of the Islamic religion as opposed to forcing the faith to be on all others. You're either Islamic or you're nothing. Christians can convert, but if they don't, well then, you know, that would be a problem that Christians would have to face.
But they have had this long-standing dream of Arab unity or of Islamic unity,
yes,
and spreading their faith around the world as much as they possibly could through various charismatic figures, beginning with Muhammad. What are some examples in a more modern context of individuals within Islam or the Arab world that have also sought to rise up and accomplish this?
Okay, one of the sects, there are two major sects of Islam. One is the Sunnis and the others are the Shiites. And we find them in conflict to some degree in Iraq, where there are many of both. Iran is mostly Shiite, and then the other nations are mostly Sunni with some Shiite populations as far as the sects go. But the Shiites anticipate very specifically in their theology, they anticipate a Messiah-type figure called a Mahdi, who will come.
Right.
And at the end of time, or the end of the age in that sense. So it's very messianic in the viewpoint and in the terminology.
As indeed other religions are as well.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes, indeed. That seems to be a common denominator, and frankly, a common denominator for a lot of non-religious religions, like Nazism in its day. They look for a messiah figure, and happened to be Hitler. But the point is that they look for a Messiah that will rally all the believers to the cause. You know, there are only two kinds of people, believers and infidels, which simply means unbelievers.
Right.
And the theme and the purpose is to see that everybody becomes a believer. And that gives the virulent strain to Islam and to, frankly, any other religion that would take that same tack. But the messianic movement is what moves people historically to do incredible things.
Is Osama bin Laden a name that everyone knows today? Yes. Is he an example of
I think he's a great example of that. He was a popular figure.
Still is
very much a hero-like figure. And he's still out there, and we still get messages from him. There have been those like President Nasser from Egypt back in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're really looking at popular figures who may or may not take on the political point of view, like Saddam Hussein, as an example.
Now, Saddam Hussein also saw himself
as
a figure trying to rally the Arab.
He actually saw himself as the ancient king Nebuchadnezzar.
That's right.
Sort of reincarnated. Osama is popular. You have, like, the Sudanese leader way back in about the late 1800s.
The Mahdi. He called himself
the Mahdi. Yeah, he was
he fought the
more
British
religious
Empire at that time.
You've got religion, you've got a religious point of view, you've got a political point of view, and you've got a popular point of view who could probably go either way, like Osama.
All right, so we see this figure that has been a part of the Islamic culture down through the years, and very much so in modern times. Are we looking at this King of the South to be a person who will lead a group of Islamic countries, Islamic Arab countries, in some kind of a provocation upon the King of the North, a northern European-based power?
Yes, the prophecy, which would be, again, in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, and the 40th verse, says that the King of the South in the modern time, or the end time, near the end of this age of history, will push at the King of the North. And push can be translated to mean attack. We have a phrase in English, when push comes to shove, mm-hmm. which is a precipitating a battle. And indeed, that can very well be the case. And pushing or attacking by the power base of that part of the world right now could be through terror. Certainly that is very actively being done. It could be through withholding oil, you know, the fuel that
through an economic weapon.
Economic right. weapon, massive, and that's been used as, you know,
that's already been used
already
time.
Used in the 70s, you
yes.
know, and periodically since. It could also be used when you can bring it into conjunction with terrorism and the populations, Islamic populations in Europe, in all the various European nations, which is rapidly growing. And Europe has a problem with that. They don't seem to know how to deal with that particular dynamic.
Well, even in the attacks that have already been made by Islamic fundamentalists in Europe, it's
yes.
already begun to change much of the thinking in some of those nations
yeah.
about tolerance and an open society, especially in the Netherlands.
These individuals who are attempting to push this thing forward, and I'm not trying to do a double play on the word push, but they're trying to advance Islam into Europe and all different parts of the world. We've got to keep that in mind as well. So you've got a few extremists, of course, but the rest of them are moderate. You're going to have a moderate leader in the future to be able to bring all of them together. But you still have these spikings of extremist movements here and there.
So whoever it will be and whenever it takes place, it's going to be some type of an attack in some manner against a larger power that will provoke them to come into the region of the Middle East. This is a very important topic. There's much more detail we can go into, but we don't have time in this short program. But our booklet, The Middle East and Bible Prophecy, will take you through a complete historical and biblical analysis of this topic. We have a free copy waiting for you, or you can read it online at beyondtoday.tv. In our next segment, we'll take a look at some possible scenarios for the fulfillment of this prophecy in today's world. Stay with us.
The longest prophecy in the Bible predicts a global war will come from the Middle East. Read where all the major powers and trends in the Middle East today are in the Bible, including the current global war of terrorism against the United States and Israel. You need to know what could happen next. From your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy, call toll-free 1-888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or go to beyondtoday.tv. Explaining the meaning of human genetics is just another way the Good News Magazine informs, with understanding you can't get anywhere else. It shows the brilliant design of the mind behind the universe. Another issue features the latest biblical research showing Jesus taught heaven is coming to the earth. Call for your free subscription toll-free 1-888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or go to beyondtoday.tv.
And we're back to Beyond Today. In that last break, you saw an ad for the Good News Magazine, which you will receive free of charge when you order your copy of the Middle East in Bible Prophecy. The Good News Magazine is our flagship publication. It's published six times a year. You'll receive a free one-year subscription. This is a magazine that goes into many biblical topics, Christian living, marriage, family, as well as prophetic topics that keep you up to date on the events that are taking place in today's news. A look at the map of the Middle East today shows us several hot spots worth examining in light of Daniel's prophecy of the King of the South. Iraq has been turned upside down. Saddam Hussein, a dominating leader, has been deposed. And in Iran, we see that the president, Ahmadinejad, has made threats against Israel and continues to push for Iranian nuclear development. Gentlemen, how does Iran itself see itself within the overall Arab world?
Well, Iran is ancient Persia. Persia had two great empires in the past, and I'm talking about way in the past. They look to that history and want to glorify it again, as most nations do that have something to look back upon. And then they're human, and human nature wants power. Mm-hmm. The president of Iraq and the Ayatollahs, who are the religious leaders in Iran, wish to exert their influence in Islam. As we discussed earlier, they are Shiite. Most of Islam is Sunni, the two major sects of Islam. They are pushing to carry the day with their philosophy and with their theology to a certain degree, and they wish to be the great players. Whether they will actually be in the King of the South scenario, they certainly will be a part of the catalyst.
Now, the Iranian president has made some very threatening comments about the Jews and the state of Israel in particular.
I think they were a little bit surprised that he spoke so strongly against the Jews and against the West. In fact, there was a scholar or someone that spoke up and said, this man doesn't know a lot about geopolitics or international politics, or he would not say it this way. So some of the people that put him into position were looking more for a moderate as opposed to someone who would say extreme things and stir up the entire Middle East as well as Europe and the United States.
Well, I think he seems to be anything but a moderate.
Correct.
He is not. In that regard, in his comments about Israel, plus his drive and desire for Iran to obtain a nuclear deterrence.
There's an ironic item here. That speech, that his infamous speech, he responds to questions about it by saying that he is saying only what the Ayatollah Khomeini said back in 1979 and the early 1980s, which it wasn't considered as radical then as it is today. However, the ante has been upped in the Middle East over those intervening decades. And there's a lot more potential power at hand for Iran because they keep moving their nuclear development forward. So suddenly that kind of strong language creates much more of a stir than when Ayatollah Khomeini was saying.
Well, I think one of the important lessons of history is to listen carefully to what these figures say, mm-hmm. because they usually mean what they say. And
yes.
If they have the power to bring them to pass, the results can be quite devastating. We go back to the Iranian president, and he has some very interesting ideas about Islamic thought and this idea of a Mahdi, which we talked about earlier, in regard to a coming figure of an individual looked to by the Shiites.
Right. Now, the way it works is this. The difference between the Sunnis and the Shia goes back to the time of Muhammad in the 600s. The Sunnis follow the successive leadership of Islam based on the caliphs that took over afterwards in a succession. The Shia base it only on the descendants of Ali. In fact, Shiite means party, as in party of Ali. Ali was the nephew of Muhammad who married Muhammad's daughter, Fatima. So they only look to the caliphs who were descended from that union.
And what is it they're looking for?
Well, they have counted 11. And then they have a prophecy of the 12th imam, meaning the main leader, the great imam.
He's what they look for yet to
arise. That is the Mahdi. And the hidden, sometimes called the hidden imam, is the way he's described. It is ostensibly...
He actually lives in a well at a location over there.
Exactly.
And so they're looking for a Messiah, really. That's not unlike the Jews who are looking for the Messiah.
Or
Christians who are looking
for
Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And they, too, have themselves a Messiah. And they will even use that language. It's not foreign to them.
So the very heavy strain within Islamic thought is looking for this messianic figure that's going to bring about the conclusion
very
of the
strong,
age.
Very strong.
We've been talking a great deal about Iran. Let's move west for a moment. Let's look at Egypt. It's the largest of the Arab states that has the largest standing army, and perhaps spend a minute just talking about that in terms of a power, because there's an interesting connection to this prophecy of Daniel.
Very specifically an interesting connection, because the prophecy in verse 40 says the king of the south will push at the king of the north, and then it talks about how the king of the north will come against him with many ships and chariots and so on, all different descriptions of war machinery, and will overrun and destroy essentially those that he overruns. And Egypt specifically mentioned as one of the nations that is overrun. Libya is also mentioned. So we have this overrunning of the Middle East by the king of the north, which is going to precipitate the final war this world will face prior to the return of Christ. In fact, Christ will have to intervene in it. But Egypt is certainly going to be a factor involved there. And Egypt has been a factor in Arab unity. That certainly can't be counted out.
Well, it was at Gamal Abdel Nasser back in the 50s.
In the
50s. That's a big proponent of that.
Exactly. And even his successor, Anwar Sadat, who took a very dominant position, not as some messianic figure, but certainly a very dominant position in the Middle East in the 70s and 80s.
Of course, he sought peace with Israel, made peace with Israel, and then lost his life.
You really have a more moderate approach right now in Egypt with Mubarak, of course.
And that could change if once he passes.
Oh, it could indeed, because you've got a lot of active extremists within Egypt that would like to be able to come up, and that can happen when Mubarak's gone.
So whatever this king of the south does as it pushes against the king of the north is going to bring into effect events that are going to usher in the time of the end. So it's a very significant event in time. We'll be right back for a final thought. Be sure and watch this message.
The longest prophecy in the Bible predicts a global war will come from the Middle East. Read where all the major powers and trends in the Middle East today are in the Bible, including the current global war of terrorism against the United States and Israel. You need to know what could happen next. From your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy, call toll-free 1-888-886-8632. That's 1-888-886-8632. Or go to beyondtoday.tv.
What happens in the Middle East impacts the entire world. The global economy runs on oil, most of which lies under the sands of the Middle Eastern deserts. Add to this nuclear weapons and religious fundamentalism, and you have a volatile mix from which will come globe-shaking events. This region, once a political backwater of little or no interest to the Western powers, is destined to become the center of the final global crisis that will usher in cataclysmic events, leading humanity to the brink of extinction, and ultimately change our world forever. All this was foretold in the prophecies of your Bible. If you believe God exists and foretells the future in His Word, then you need to shape your life according to that Word. You need to repent and live by every word of God. You can find assurance and hope in this dangerous and troubling time if you're willing not only to believe, but take action on that belief. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Harris. Appreciate it.
When you're looking to understand your future, remember this program that's Beyond Today. Thanks for watching.
For the free literature offered on today's program, go online to beyondtoday.tv. Please join us again next week on Beyond Today.